Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
In our final preview of the World Cup in Qatar next month, today we're looking at the welfare of the players and how much pressure they're going to be under playing in a tournament in a country that has such a cloud hanging over its human rights record, as we were hearing about yesterday. And I'm joined in the studio once again by Gavin Cooney, sports writer with the42.ie, and also former Premier League footballer and soccer analyst Keith Tracy. And you're very welcome. Thanks for being here. We were just talking about how much, you know, when you leave aside all of the controversy around Qatar, we're all really looking forward to it, aren't we? I mean, particularly you, Keith, I know.
Yeah, I can't wait. I think it's going to be a cracker. I really do. We were just talking off air, you know, who we think's going to win it. And
let's do that bit first then.
Well, I think I have a sneaky feeling it could be one of the South Americans. I think it could be Brazil and Argentina. Failing that, there's a whole host of European clubs or European nations that could win it. I'm anybody but the English, really, you know, in terms of that. Just in terms of the media, you know, you never ever hear the end of it. If they win it, even if they go deep into the tournament, which I think they will, you know, we'll never really hear the end of it. So from a peace point of view, hopefully it's anybody but the English.
It would make it exciting, though, if the English manage to do that. You know, we'll all be able to take our eyes off it.
It'll keep us engaged in it, all right. Yeah.
You like Serbia, Gavin, don't you?
Yeah, just as a dark horse. I don't know if they'll go and win it, but they're kind of lengthy enough odds. And I saw them against Ireland in the qualification campaign, and they looked great, you know. Mm-hmm. And the draw is relatively kind to them. And I just think that there might be a couple of upsets. Just there's such a narrow window between the end of the league season and the start of the World Cup. There's only a week, you know. So that's not a lot of time for the top teams to find their rhythm. So I think there might be a couple of upsets early on, and I fancy Serbia to be one of them.
A South America team, do you agree with Keith on that
one? Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I would love to see Argentina win, just for, you know, crowning the legacy of Lionel Messi. I would love to see that happen. But I think Brazil look really strong and look kind of oddly stable going into this World Cup. So I think, yeah, I think he's might be onto one there.
Do you have a pick between those two?
I lean towards Brazil. My head would say Brazil, but my heart would say Argentina, just again for the Leo Messi factor. I think he's done everything in his career. He's been brilliant on the eye to watch for so long, lit up so many stadiums. For him to get the World Cup would just crown an excellent career.
And we've been talking about the controversy of being in the wintertime, but it actually might suit the likes of Messi because it's midway through his season rather than at the end. So we oddly might see these guys, you know, playing at a much higher level at the wintertime than you would in the summertime at the end of their long club season.
Okay, well, let's come back now to where we started. So we've been discussing all week the numerous criticisms of Qatar hosting the event, due in the main because of their human rights record. The individual competing countries, though, Gavin, what have they been saying about this? Have there been any countries that have been particularly outspoken?
So Germany, Netherlands and Norway, who actually haven't qualified, but their players took to the pitch before matches at the start of 2021, emblazoned in shirts reading human rights. So, but that aside, there hadn't been a whole lot until yesterday.
Okay, and yesterday then we had the Australia, who became the first World Cup final side, to release a collective statement from their players. They were criticising Qatar's human rights record. We'll have a listen now to what they had to say.
Over the last 2 years, we have been on a journey to understand and learn more about the situation in Qatar.
We have learned that progress has been made both on paper and in practice. The kafala system has largely been dismantled, working conditions have improved, and a minimum wage has been established.
Whilst the reforms established in Qatar are an important and welcome step, their implementation remains inconsistent and requires improvement.
We have learned that the decision to host the World Cup in Qatar has resulted in the suffering and in the harm of countless of our fellow workers.
As players, we fully support the rights of the LGBTI+ people. But in Qatar, people are not free to love the person that they choose.
We stand with FIFPro, the Building and Woodworkers International, and the International Trade Union Confederation, seeking to embed reforms and establish a lasting legacy in Qatar.
This must include establishing a migrant resource centre, effective remedy for those who have been denied their rights, and the decriminalisation of all same-sex relationships.
Kind of breaks the seal on it, doesn't it, when you hear the players coming out and making a strong statement like that?
Absolutely,
Gavin.
Like, it's so rare. I mean, some players had been planning some kind of protest with this armband, the One Love armband that we can get into, but it's very rare to see players make a protest that direct. You know, that's a direct call for action. You know, set up a remediation fund for the workers and decriminalise homosexuality in the country. So That's very direct. It's quite groundbreaking, I think, in terms of players' protests. And it is going to be fascinating to see now how many players follow suit. Like, we were talking outside and we were wondering, is this now going to lead to more players and more teams falling into line with the Australian team and repeating that message, which is going to be really interesting to see if that happens.
Well, Keith, it certainly ramps up the pressure on the players and on the teams, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah. I welcome the video from the Australian men's team. I think it's excellent. I think we need stuff like that. For too long, teams have just put up and shut up and got on with it and played the game and moved on. But it's not until you get a little bit older in the tooth when you're playing football that you realise being a footballer is a lot more than about just being a footballer. You've got responsibilities and you can be a role model to people. So I understand players are going in, they're under pressure, and to play in the World Cup is the biggest thing a footballer wants to do. So you try and make it as easy as possible and not cloud yourself with these sort of issues. And let's be honest, players shouldn't have to, you know, have this stuff in their heads. They should be able to just play football. But the fact that FIFA are having the tournament there means the players have to take some sort of action. And like I say, I really welcome what the Australian men's team are doing. I do think there'll be a domino effect. I think a lot of teams will do it.
Yeah, I mean, and there will be pressure now, given that that statement was made on teams, and there'll be individuals within teams saying, listen, we need to follow suit.
I wouldn't say pressure, because I don't think pressure's the right word. If, you know, we should be, the tournament should not be getting held in Qatar. Every footballer knows that. That's not the issue. It's whether or not they want to just concentrate on the football, which, you know, it probably isn't what people want to hear, but footballers, managers will be telling the footballers just to concentrate on the football.
That's what I mean about the pressure. You know, if you're somebody who thinks, all I ever wanted to do was play in a World Cup and I just want to go and play football, but now you're going to probably have to make some statement about human rights, which is the right thing to do in any other context. But if you're a footballer who just wants to kick a ball, it's a hard place to be.
It is, and this is why I think, you know, there'll be older people in the dressing rooms, the likes of Harry Kane. When we look at the English team, he'd be a little bit older. He would be able to do that. You know, you could task him with being professional, being able to play well, but be having to speak to the media and do them sort of things. The likes of a Phil Foden, who's only just starting to play, you know, these things can bog him down, and you want to release him to be able to play his best football. So from a manager's point of view, there might be players that you can trust, and you can tell them that, listen, you can go and task yourself at that side of the media and I can still trust you to play well. But there's younger players that'll just be too much for. When they get downtime, they need downtime. You don't want them speaking to the media. You want them mentally and physically relaxing. So I do think there will be older players that will come out and give statements, but I do think there will be quite a lot that won't, just because they're trying to simplify the game and win the World Cup.
The Australia statement is really clever, because you've done it now and you've set down the marker and you don't really need to comment about it again.
Yeah, completely. Like, I kind of changed my thinking on this. I initially thought that it wasn't fair to expect players to take a stance. Like, it's not their fault that it's in Qatar, you know. I mean, direct your ire at FIFA and talk about the remediation fund that we were talking about during the week. But you know, when you hear that Australia message, you realise that is really powerful,
it's
actually.
Really powerful,
and, you know, and it's the player's voice carries so much more weight, you know. Like, I mean, everyone else will be written off as you have an agenda against this or that, etc. But it's the players actually who do have the power to make a difference, make their voices heard above all else. So I'm beginning to change my mind on that.
Keith mentioned Harry Kane, and he's going to be wearing that armband, isn't he? The One Love armband. Mm. That in itself, though, is controversial, isn't it?
It's controversial on all sides, really, because, I mean, FIFA, the Qatari authorities say it's no place for political statements, so don't wear it. European sides have written to FIFA to ask for permission to wear it, because FIFA would interpret it as a political slogan and therefore can't be shown. Now, the FA and England have said that they'll continue to wear it even if they're fined by FIFA. But then on the other side, like, I mean, it's been criticised by LGBT rights activists, including Peter Thatchell, who staged a protest in Doha yesterday that was, shall we say, interrupted by police. And he said it's a bit too vague, you know, like, I mean, One Love, what does it mean? The rainbow colours are there, but, you know, it's not exactly like a punchy, powerful political statement a la the Australia players. So, and like, Gareth Southgate, the England manager, has been really good on social and political issues throughout his time. He's not been as strong on this. You know, he said, like, this is about as much as we can do. But that's all changed now, as I say, in the wake of that Australia statement yesterday.
And what are the Danes doing? They've got a specially designed jersey.
Yeah, so, I mean, anyone who's watched any major tournament in their lives will recognise the Denmark jersey made by the manufacturers Hummel. They have these famous white chevrons down the sleeve. Those chevrons have been faded. Their logos have been faded. Hummel, which is, you know, maybe it's cynically, maybe it's good marketing, but they also say that they want to highlight that they don't want to be associated with this. And they've also brought out a third kit that's all black, the colour of mourning, for what they say is a tournament that's cost thousands of lives.
And they're being permitted to do this by FIFA, are they?
They are being permitted to do it, yeah. I mean, you're not allowed to show any slogans, so I suppose Hummel's theory is, well, let's take them away.
Gary Lineker, I thought this was quite controversial when he said, I know two Premiership players who are gay and who are quite close to announcing publicly that they're gay, and they should do it, he believes, during the World Cup. Now, I think that puts an awful lot of pressure on those two people, who clearly they'll know who they are when they read Gary Lineker's comments. Do you think that would be helpful? You know, a good idea?
I think in the broad spectrum of things, it would be helpful, but it has to be helpful to the people involved. You know, they can't be coming out for other people's reasons, but, you know, because they feel under pressure from Gary Lineker. Yeah. But the one thing that I would say, I was a professional footballer in England for 13 years. I played in every professional league in England, and I never met one openly gay footballer. I'm sure I have come across gay footballers, but never openly. And, you know, England, it's not this, you know, there's a reason there's no openly gay footballers in England. And it's not because of the people within football. It's because of the crowds, the fans, social media, these types of stuff. So although we can sit there and say, you know, Qatar is less than perfect, England's not the best environment as well for gay footballers. We have to remember that.
It's a pretty good point, you know. And I think someone said to him, what about how the fans would react and, you know, the shouting that would happen during the match? And he said, Gary Lineker said, she'll get shouted at anyway. But it's not like that, is it?
Well, it is. A lot of the stuff is
personal.
I know
you'll get, that's very personal.
It's not to that, you know. I got dogs abuse or Irish abuse, stuff like that, but, you know, never about me homosexual, about being a homosexual or stuff like that. So, yeah, look, I would really welcome people coming out, especially top-flight footballers, because I know there's one or two in the Championship, there's one or two in America, but not an awful lot in top-flight football. So if you could get openly gay footballers to come out, I do think that would help, but it has to be right for those people involved.
All right, we have to leave it there, unfortunately. Look, it's such a strange event, isn't it? Because we are all really looking forward to the football, and then you've all this other stuff on the side that we need to address and be mindful as well. Gavin, thanks very much for all your help this week, for coming in. Gavin from the42.ie, who will be there for the World Cup, and we look forward to hearing from you then too. The World Cup gets underway on the 20th of November, the finals on the 18th of December, and you can follow all the action online on the RT Player and on RT2 television. There'll be 200 hours almost of coverage in total, and there'll be extensive coverage on RT Radio throughout the finals as well. Keith, thanks very much for coming in as well. Take a break.
Text 51551.
Thanks so much, that was great.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.